Brazen Hearts, Fresh on Styx. Chapter 3, The Gift of the Sadie. I told my Aunt Sadie, look, it's Chunky. This was yesterday when I was visiting her workroom to hit her up for a boon. She doesn't have any live humans, but sometimes when she finds one with a lot of tattoos or nice scarification, she'll remove the skin more carefully instead of having me or one of the kids do it. So she ends up with cadavers and pieces around her area. I was pointing at one of them with its eyes open. Aunt Sadie said, he doesn't look chunky enough. No, Chunky is a human I tell all my problems to. I tell him what's going on in my life, and then I butcher him, and then I get all the relief of a confession with none of the liabilities. Then I pray to the grandmothers that his spirit will possess another human the next time I need someone to talk to. I can always see that sparkle in his eye, and I know it's Chunky come back to listen to me again. Aunt Sadie said, this is like an imaginary friend who bleeds. I like it. Now make yourself useful. Stir the kettle. Don't taste it. It's curing solution for the hides. You don't want your guts turning to leather. Aunt Sadie's really old. Probably not my aunt, but it's difficult to trace all the marriages and remarriages and, She used to be great at hunting dwarves and kobolds, but she lost both her legs when a catapult rolled over them. She makes herself useful now by tanning hides and making saddles, boots, leatherwork. Every few years, a group of younger, ambitious workers in the clan will try to get rid of her. They're hoping one of them will get promoted into her position, and then it kind of creates a domino effect of, like, that position is empty, so someone else gets promoted up to that, and lower positions on down the line. So that's how they get a group of them together. So they'll drag her out in the woods, like you'd do with any person when they get too old to bother taking care of them. And then the only one that comes back out of the woods is Aunt Sadie, and she's just pulling herself home, a little battered but still intact. Nobody ever sees those plotters again, and it takes another 5 or 10 years before people build up the nerve to try it again. I stirred the kettle and told her I wasn't planning to stay very long. I was just telling Rico about this boy that I have my eye on. She said, tell me about him. I said, well, it's kind of a secret. He's a sweet, rough-looking goblin, nice tusks. He's not from our clan, but I think you guys will like him. I thought maybe you could give me an idea or a suggestion. Aunt Sadie said, yeah, Rico always hits me up for a special mojo bags before he goes out turning tricks or whatever it is he does. I said, no, I'm just asking for advice. She rolled her eyes, which is hard for her to do because hers are so small and beady and black with no whites around them, so you can't tell where she's looking. Here's my advice, she says. 1, don't teach the spirits of your grandmothers how to suck eggs. 2, don't try to pull the wool over the eyes of your Aunt Sadie, because she will cut her way out of the wool. And 3, don't go dating hobgoblins. Hopefully you'll listen to 1 and 2. I know you won't listen to the 3rd, so... So I gotta help you minimize the damage of what you're hoping to plunge into. Here's what I need. Tell me about your last mate who survived more than a week. So I thought about it. There was a Grunzek, Epstein... No, wait. Jeff? It's not my fault they didn't last more than a week. I didn't kill any of them. Aunt Sadie said, why not? It doesn't matter. I don't want to hear about those ones. I want you to tell me about the last mate you had who stayed alive for more than a week. I guess the last one would be Jeremy. He was a poet. Aunt Sadie said, woof. I said, tell me about it. Sadie said, no, dear, you tell me about it. I'm trying to help you. First thing you do is drink this. She handed me a clay bowl with some cloudy liquid in it. Looked a little like the curing solution from the kettle, but it tasted like apple cider. Tell me what he was like and why he left you. I want to hear the embarrassing part. I said, why do you assume he left me? Isn't it possible I could have dumped him when I found out what a schmuck he was? Sadie said, I don't assume, dear. I know he left you. I just don't know why. Fine. Jeremy was a poet, and he wrote a poem about me. That's embarrassing enough. He made one up while we were mating. It started out very nice. The poem, not the mating. He recited, you know you are a sweet little heartmonger, Josie. And you know your love will satisfy my hunger, Josie. I want to smother you over a baked potato. I won't harm you much, my cute little tomato. You got to be mine, all mine. Shucks, give it to me. Josie gravy. I want that onion, so sweet it makes me cry. I cut him off right there. I said, don't try to slip that crap past me. I know plagiarism when I hear it. You're doing a song by the poet St. James the Marshalful, Lord Hendrix. Praise be unto him, said Jeremy. Whatever, his miracles are just another human myth. I said, the only reason people believe in his power as a prophet is because his verse was so good. Everybody knows Foxy Lady. Jeremy said, listen, Jimi Hendrix wasn't human, he was a drow elf. Either way, goblin copyright laws don't apply to the lesser races. I said, it applies when you're trying to impress girls, you faker. I mean, the food imagery was overdone all throughout, but Josie gravy? You're all talking how you want to smother me over a baked potato, satisfy your hunger. What's your preferred outcome here, to mate with me or cannibalize me? Jeremy said, whichever works best for you, baby. I said, get off me, none of it works. Your goblin copyright loopholes don't impress me, it's still plagiarism. He was putting his clothes on and he said, I'll tell you who was impressed. And they used this human word, some kind of magical incantation, I'm not sure what it means. He said, I'll tell you who was impressed, biatch. Glimmer Train Stories was impressed. Have you heard of the journal Glimmer Train Stories? No, because you don't read. Well, they published it. They didn't recognize the rhythm of Hendrix in it, so they published it, and now I'm a published poet, and I be rolling in the Benjamins. I don't know where he picked up all these human expressions. So then I tried to be friendly with Jeremy again and get him to resume mating, but he wasn't having it. There, I told you the embarrassing part. Are you happy, Aunt Sadie? She said, no, hon, I'm not happy. I looked over and she was pulling a bunch of glistening man skins off the top of this cage. The cage was made out of thin twigs tied together with twine and sinew. It didn't look solid enough to hold a leopard, but that didn't matter because Aunt Sadie was unlatching the front wall of the cage and letting the leopard out. She said, you were one of the plotting bastards that wanted me dragged out in the woods and left for dead last time. The leopard slinked out and kept its eye on Aunt Sadie for a minute, cowering away from her. Then it saw me and hissed. I said, no, call it off. I didn't want you dead. I love you, Aunt Sadie. Why would I want you dead? She said, you're sick of selling giblets at the mall and you want a nice cushy job tanning man leather back at the house. That's why you wanted to get rid of me. The leopard sunk its claws into my boot, which was lucky because they're thick rhino skin. Sadie, why would you think that? I don't want you dead. Those were horrible traitors who tried to drag you out in the woods. It's a service what you did for the clan, eliminating all that dead weight. Carl was never much of a brother to me anyway. Aunt Sadie ignored the leopard and ignored me. She turned back to the hide she was scraping. It's all very touching. You're so sentimental, Josie dear. I don't believe a word of it. I punched the leopard in the snout, but it came back a second later. I tried to strangle the thing, but its neck was way too strong. It raked long gashes down my arm. I screamed, fine, it's your workmanship. I want you alive for the stuff you make. I love the clothes you make out of manskins. When I try to seduce this hobgoblin, I was planning to wear the brown man leather corset you made me, the one with the elf bones sewn into it, the one you gave me last cross day. She looked up at me for a second, actually tore her eyes away from the job in her hand, so I knew my words were having an impact. I want you alive for decades to come so you can make me coats and harnesses and whips and all the awesome things you make. You're an asset to the clan. Your stuff brings in tons of money, and I don't know where I'd go for good quality leather wear if anything happened to you. My arms couldn't hold out. The leopard was on top of me, pushing its teeth closer to my face. Aunt Sadie's face crumpled into a wrinkly mess, even more wrinkly and twisted than usual. I guess she was crying, but she's too dried up for anything to actually leak down her face. She put down the hide and flipped her hands in a complicated pattern, like two birds chasing each other and then falling out of the sky. The leopard snapped at my nose and I could smell stinky cat breath. I closed my eyes because I didn't want to see the final bite when it made contact. Then the cat breath was gone. The claws were gone. My fists were gripping each other instead of the leopard's neck. My arms still hurt where the cat had raked me, but the gashes were gone. The leopard was curled up in the cage with one eye open, peeking out at me. The cage looked more solid than before. Maybe it was a different cage, because this one was made out of thick dowels instead of the twigs I had seen before. "That is the sweetest thing anyone has said to me in 100 years, Aunt Sadie said. "And what you said was selfish, so I know it was from the heart." I said, "Plus I wouldn't want to try killing you because everybody knows how tough you are. I mean, everybody knows the story about what you did to Grandpa." Aunt Sadie said, "You mean your grandpa or my grandpa?" I said, "Kervish, my grandpa. Your dad. I don't know the story about your grandpa. What did you do to him?" Sadie said, "Ha ha ha, no one else knows that story, and they never will." Rika was right. Aunt Sadie gave me a kind of a love potion, and she said to use it either on the madam at the Seminole Health Spa or on the bouncer. She said, "Don't give it to the hobgoblin. It's not that kind of love potion. And it's a good thing I didn't, because I'll tell you what." Well, no, I'll tell you about that next time. Oh, where does all the time go? I hope to see your soul possessing the body of some villager we capture next time, Chunky. Kiss, kiss. You've been listening to Chapter 3 of Brazen Hearts Fresh on Sticks by Rob Northrup, recorded March 18, 2006. If you like this story, you'll want to get my collection of short stories, Dungeons and Day Jobs, which you can order on my website, evilbobdayjob.tripod.com. You can also subscribe to this podcast at evilbobdayjob.tripod.com. I want to give mad props to my wife, Melinda, and her new podcast, The Basket Case Show, which you can find at basketcaseshow.blogspot.com. Until next time, keep keeping it fresh. And are you done with that stick?